doubling back, I think I'd go shepherd's pie fifth, chicken pot pie fourth, apple pie third, banana cream second, and Reese's peanut butter pie first.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here. My name is Walker Simas, and as always, we are so excited to have you with us. Today, I'm joined by DJ Pihowski of No Laying Up to uncover some things that you may not know about the way he sees the game or the process of creating golf-related content for people to enjoy. What I like most about DJ and his role at No Laying Up is how wide his skill set is. He thinks about golf really well. He understands the many subcultures of the game. He can write beautifully. He has a great eye with camera work, and he can shoot the shit as well as anybody. I really, really enjoyed this one. I hope you will too. If you haven't already, if you haven't heard the news, we have partnered with a company called Global Turf to nominate superintendents throughout the United States and into our next giveaway. We're going to do an international one, but there's a link at our bio. Please nominate the superintendent at your club, your place of play, or even a superintendent who is doing really great work somewhere else. We have a link in our bio. It will take you to a very, very short survey where you can do so. First giveaway ends on Memorial Day, and the superintendent who wins the most votes will receive an item from Global Turf Steel Inventory. We've got some sweet prizes for the super that wins. Hopefully some interviews to come. I'm very excited about that. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Without further ado, please welcome DJ Pihowski. DJ Pihowski, thank you for being here today. Excited to chat.
Greetings. Thank you for having me. Appreciate the invite.
Excited to run it back. You know, we did this last week, and you were part of one of our failures, part of the journey in growing a small and humble podcast.
If anybody knows what it feels like to have an audio recording just glitch out mid interview, it is me. So I've been there more times than I would care to admit. I know how it feels, and you know, it's kind of a thrill to be on the other side of it, to be totally honest with you.
It's awesome. It's good stuff. Well, thanks for being here.
Sure.
I think most people have a really good idea of who you are, the people that you work alongside, and the work that you do. But we do have some younger folks who are listening, and some people who just got into the game. You're a podcaster, you're a writer, you're a journalist, a videographer, you're a lot of things. Can you give us a brief background on all of that?
Sure. Yeah, no, I would definitely agree that most people know who I am for sure. No, that's a joke. I work with an outfit of misfits called No Laying Up. I do a bunch of different things in that capacity. I mostly video stuff. We have a couple different travel series that we do on YouTube, on our YouTube channel for No Laying Up. I kind of spearhead the video department of what we have going on. So we have, like I said, a couple different travel series. We have kind of some loose, quote unquote, competitive type things that we do. We have some stuff we do with players, with like tour players, LPGA players, PGA Tour players. And yeah, we do a lot kind of on that front. And then I'm also kind of one of the many voices of our podcast, kind of talking about the world of golf, mainly professional golf on the podcast, but kind of the world of golf at large as well, which we do a couple times a week on the No Laying Up podcast and the Trap Draw. And we talk about movies and music and all kinds of different shit on the Trap Draw as well. And I also do some writing. I was a former, in a past life, journalism student. I worked for Golf Week magazine for a while. I worked for the PGA Tour for 5 or 6 years in a bunch of different capacities, mainly writing. I also do some freelance writing for the Golfer's Journal and some other spots. And yeah, I think that's kind of the gist of it.
It's hard to fit a resume in one page these days.
It is. That's, yeah, one of those tried and true, methods that I don't know that I totally ever agreed with. I think if you have enough interesting stuff to put on there, I think it's when you start putting a bunch of Boy Scouts and camp counselor and all that stuff. When that stretches out over a couple pages, you might be, that might be a little bit much.
Move into the 6.5 font.
Yeah, exactly.
It's awesome. So you just got back from the home of golf, Scotland. What was that like?
It was great. I had a very unique trip there. we were there on the positive side. We were there with a group of 30, 31, something like that. Kind of podcast listeners, friendlies, for a trip that we planned about 3 years ago now, which is crazy. Just kept getting delayed, and ended up falling on Masters week this year. So me and the rest of the guys kind of traveled over about a week early to kind of get acclimated and be over there for the Masters so that we could do our normal podcasts and live shows and all that kind of business in the evenings, which was a blast. We'd kind of wake up and play golf in the morning, take a little nap, get cleaned up, and then you could kind of go to the pub and start watching golf around 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon. That would stretch until about midnight, and then we would do our live shows after that, and then you wake up and play golf in the morning. So it was really great for the first kind of 1 or 2 days, and then it got to be a little sleepy after that. But after that kind of ended, we had a trip with kind of the whole rest of the group joined that I was talking about, and we ended up playing kind of everywhere in and around St. Andrews: new course, old course, Jubilee, Eden, Crail, Panmure, Carnoustie, Ely. Just a really awesome trip with a lot of great people. And then I liked it so much that I got COVID and got stuck in St. Andrews for a couple more days, which was very strange experience, just kind of being in isolation in the home of golf. But ultimately, a great trip. The positives definitely outweighed the negatives in a pretty big way.
Liked it so much, couldn't get out of there.
Couldn't leave.
Everybody asks that impossible question, like, how do I take the perfect trip to Scotland in 5 days? I'm not going to do that to you, but I am anxious to get over there. I've not been across the pond, and you guys put out some awesome contents. Like, there's so much stuff now to figure out how to do a trip right. And seems like you got to take, 3 or 4 trips to get the full scope of things over there.
Definitely. There's for sure a couple different, ethoses on how to tackle it. I definitely know the trip I would not recommend unless you are, a young, ambitious, person who's good with very little sleep, which is the trip that we took for our YouTube travel series, which is called Tourist Sauce. It was the second season of the series that we did. And it was, we just bit off like way, way, way too much. We tried to do the entire country in, about 8 days, and it just turned into we would wake up at 5 or 6, drive a couple hours to a golf course, walk 18 holes, grab a quick sandwich, drive another 2 hours, walk another 18 holes, drive another couple hours, get to an Airbnb, sleep for 3 or 4 or 5 hours, wake up and kind of do it again for, 7, 8 days in a row. And it was amazing because we saw all kinds of different places. We got up to, North Berwick and that whole East Lothian area. We got all around Fife and some of the St. Andrews courses. We got up to the Highlands. We saw Cruden Bay along the way and Castle Stewart. And, we ended up getting all the way up to Dornick and Brora and Nairn and all these unbelievable places. But yeah, even being over there, again, I think it was my first trip back actually, recently was my first trip since we had been over there for that. I think that's right. Or maybe I went one other time with my family, but, first golf trip since we had gone. And yeah, I mean, just waking up in the morning and walking those holes and, you kind of feeling how you feel at the end of the day. It was like, God, if we tried to do that again, we would be a danger to ourselves and others driving on those roads at night. And, hitting the golf ball the way we'd be hitting the golf ball. It would be reckless to our health. So unless you're in a really good spot to go take on all that, I would recommend kind of sticking to 1 or 2 one or two regions and just, you know, unpack your bags and settle in and have yourself a nice trip.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've always wondered about. And I feel like a lot of people who watch the No Laying Up content have kind of wondered this too, is like, when you're doing that much, can you even enjoy the place that you're in? And I'm sure the answer to that is yes, but I think you'd probably agree that you've had to work into that a little bit. What has that been like?
Oh, definitely. It's fun. I mean, we started in a place where, you know, I feel like we've kind of come a little bit full circle and we've made a lot of mistakes and figured out a lot of ways to enjoy it and a lot of like kind of where our limits are and what we're able to do and what we're not able to do. And I think when we first started, the first two seasons we did of that series in particular were Australia and Scotland. And I think we just had so much adrenaline going for all of those trips that, you know, it's, you're just kind of like buzzing and almost feel like you're, you know, you have this like high the whole time you're there, especially Australia. It was like, I don't think any of us were jet lagged because we were so like just amped to be there and so nervous about like, we don't even know what the fuck we're doing as far as like trying to film stuff and trying to like literally, I mean, we still struggle with this, but literally trying to get things in focus and literally trying to figure out the camera settings and, oh God, we accidentally shot that straight into the sun and you can't see anything that's in there. Like trying to figure out all that stuff constantly. You're almost like, don't, you know, it's weird. Like you have this kind of like nervous energy, excitement, adrenaline, fun. And then after that, we did California, which we did in an RV. All of us together, the five of us, drove from LA to San Francisco in an RV and stopped a bunch of places along the way. And that was fun in itself too. I mean, we were playing a bunch of great golf courses and, you know, spending a bunch of time together and laughing and joking and trying to find campsites and trying to, you know, set up the sewage system and trying to like dry off because the weather sucked ass the entire trip that we were
in California.
California. Yeah. I mean, we just thought it was gonna be like this beautiful, beautiful trip. And it was, I mean, it's just like so cold and so rainy the whole time. But that was one where we're, you know, there's so many moving parts again that it's almost like you're just kind of like trying to get through the day. And there's like something really, really fun about the challenge. And then it's almost like, and this is like very inside baseball, so sorry if this is, you know, not interesting to people, but the you know, then we almost like cleared out enough of the hurdles that there was so much more focus on the production side of it. Because I think when you go back and watch stuff, or when you're trying to like, I mean, obviously you want it to look and sound as good as you can, right? And so like we all kind of came into this like with very, very, very little experience, very little know-how of what we're actually doing. And so, you know, we're shooting a lot of stuff on our cell phones, or we're shooting a lot of stuff like kind of very run and gun. And then you go back and watch it and it's like, oh God, if I just would have done this one small thing differently, like you would have been able to hear that a lot better. Or if I would have changed this camera setting, or if I would have had an ND filter, if I would have had whatever, like all those things start to accumulate to where it almost becomes like unwatchable. And it's very easy to unwatchable, like to yourself. Right. And it's very easy to kind of say like, oh, people like that it's underproduced, or people like that it feels like homemade. But it's really hard to like turn that part of your brain off, right? It's the same as producing a podcast, right? If you knew your microphone could sound better, you would definitely do whatever you could to make it sound better, right? And it you can't just be like, ah, fuck it, who cares? If, you know, if they don't want to listen, they don't have to watch it. But it's you kind of have enough of those things that like accumulate to where the next trip we took, we went to Ireland. And it was amazing. We worked with a guy named Tom Kennedy in Experience Ireland. Can't shout him out enough. Great guy to work with. But he had set up all the golf. He'd set up we had a driver for the whole trip. We had everything, like all the hotels were great. Everything was kind of like set up for us so that it was like, okay, you can just focus on like producing the best show you possibly can. And then you almost get like so in your head about like, okay, well now everything has to look and sound as good as you can. And that almost like is what makes the golf less fun, right? And so just continuing on and to kind of like finish this long ramble here, the next one was in Pinehurst, and that was kind of a mix of both. We had a little bit of like doing stuff on our own, but then at that point we had like elevated the look of everything and we kind of needed to like keep up with that. And so like that kind of burned us out. And then the next one was in Oregon, And on that one, we kind of were smart enough to realize like, okay, we need some help. And so we brought a guy named Ben Hoteling, who works with us, who's an awesome guy, brought him with us to kind of like run and gun and like be an extra camera. And that was so successful that now finally for the last season we did in Michigan, we had Ben and we had another guy, Cody McBride, and we had another guy, Nick Kelly, and they're there to kind of like hopefully take some of that stress off. And we're also like tweaking the format constantly. So, you know, people can wake up in the morning and they kind of know what their assignment is. Right. So it's not like everybody waking up every day and being like, okay, I need to do everything. Right. I need to play golf. I need to shoot everything. I need to do interviews. I need to fly the drone. Like when everybody feels like that, then it's just like pure chaos. Right. And you're just running around and it makes the edit really bad. It makes the production really bad. And everybody's stressed out the whole time. But when you can like tell people up front, like, hey, Neil, today you and Tron are playing a match and everybody else has the camera stuff covered. And all you guys got to do is worry about playing golf. Like it makes them have so much more fun and they can sink in and they know that like their job for the day is to just be on camera, have a bunch of energy, pay attention to the golf course so that they can like talk eloquently about it after the fact. And everybody else kind of knows, you know, the inverse, right? Like I'll play as much as I can, but really my job today is like to hold a camera or to notice certain features or whatever. So that's a very, very long answer. That's potentially not interesting to people, but that's how the excitement and the enjoyability is kind of ebbed and flowed. So I think we're back around to a point where I can't wait for this upcoming one to an undisclosed location.
No, I'm fired up and I love it. I mean, I like how honest you guys have been kind of through the struggle. And I think the kind of piece it together portion of those first couple travel series were like, that was kind of what made it awesome. And people have said that, and you guys have heard that feedback, but you know, you've had the opportunity to go to a lot of places. You've traveled, you've met people along the way. Sometimes it may have felt more like work and sometimes it may have felt like just, man, this is sick, you know? And I want to lead that kind of into our next section of the podcast. We'll go kind of hit each, you know, of our main tenets here at the TIE: golf course architecture, a little bit of culture, a little bit of competition. And we'll start with culture. You know, there's so much culture in the game. It's different everywhere. I think that's what makes it great. DJ, I know you're a sports guy on and off the golf course. Like, what makes golf a game unlike any other? You've probably seen this a lot of places. What do you love about it?
That's a big question. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of the only question, right? When it comes to golf, but it's, God, this is going to sound so cheesy, but I do like believe it wholeheartedly, is that I think the reason that everybody gets sucked in as deep as they do is because there's so few things in life that mirror life as well as golf does. And I think it's not, you know, we always joke about this, and Tron and I were just talking about this the other day. Like, if you want to like really, really, really get to know somebody and really see who they are, it's like, go have dinner with them or go play golf with them. Right. And see how they are with, you know, see how they are with staff, see how they are with competition, see how they are with adversity, see how they are with enjoyment, see what their sense of humor is, see what they, you know, how do they celebrate? How do they get pissed off? Are they genuinely interested in what you have to say? Are they just waiting for you to ask them questions about themselves? Do they take it, you know, like, is it kind of like a meditative practice for them, or is it some sort of like, you know, conquest that, you know, they get obsessive about and need to be the best at, you know? And there's just all these little things that, and that's really just about like actually playing the game. I mean, I think when you even like zoom out further from that, you get into like the travel aspects, you get into like how golf is this like weird thing that can take you. I mean, it's taken us everywhere from, you know, down the street. We just filmed a video the other day with a guy who owns a local golf shop here in Jack's Beach. And it's also taken us to Tasmania, right? And everywhere you go, it's like
freaking crazy.
Yeah. And everywhere you go, it's like, well, there's usually roughly 18 holes. The concept is pretty much the same. And Everybody's like pretty fired up about the same parts, right? And I think at its core, it's eminently simple, right? It's like, you know, we're all trying to get a little better every day, and we're all trying to get the ball in the hole in the least stressful way possible. And you know, outside of that, it can be as endlessly complex as you want it to be as well.
Yeah.
You know, you can dive down rabbit holes on equipment. You can dive down rabbit holes on fucking putter covers. You can dive in on, you know, instruction stuff. You can dive in on travel. You can dive in on, you know, everything. There's public clubs, there's private clubs, there's, you know, social implications, there's community implications. There's, I mean, it's just, it mirrors and it wiggles its way into every facet of life that you could possibly imagine. And I think that is why it's annoying sometimes. And I think that's why it's like overwrought sometimes, but I also think on a much larger scale, that's why it's really, really great. And why, you know, we've more or less kind of dedicated our lives to, playing and chasing the stupid thing that we're talking about.
Love it. So you were on Jay Rebel's podcast talking about the sourdough story. Henry just interviewed Jay Rebel. If you haven't listened to the podcast, go check it out. But you shared your sourdough story. And so basically, what was the course that you were at?
I was at Sylvie's Valley Ranch out in Oregon, like in the middle Eastern Oregon, like truly no offense to them or anyone. The most like remote place I think I've been in the United States.
And basically you ended up home with a sourdough starter, thinking like, how the fuck did I come home with a sourdough starter? I was there to play golf, you know?
No, and they had a great, awesome story about, like, you know, like I said, it's way out in the middle of nowhere in this kind of like high desert of Eastern Oregon. And the place is so cool. We did a couple different videos about it, but if you ever get the chance to go, it's an awesome retreat with like a small group. It's an awesome place for couples. It's a really, really cool spot. And they kind of like make as much of the food and beverage operation kind of on the ranch as they can. And one of the things they do is like, they just take bread really, really seriously. And they had this starter, which, you know, hardly unique in that regard. I think about 70% of like bored 30-year-old dudes, were making sourdough, during the pandemic, but
it's true.
They just had this great story about like how this starter was kept alive all the way back from like the 1890s or something like that. And, they still use it every day. So they're like, yeah, if anybody wants any, like, well, come on back. We'll just like scrape some out of the tub for you, and you can take it home and you can feed it and you can keep it going. And it's little shit like that. That is like, I don't know. I mean, that you don't get that if like we always joke about, you know, basketball's an amazing game, right? Soccer's an amazing game. Football's great. Tennis is unbelievable, but like, you're not getting on an airplane to like go, you know, play different basketball courts around the world, right? And you're not going, and like it just has this tendency. Again, I know I'm being very cliche and like high-minded, and I sound like a Hallmark card here, but there's just all these different things about like golf that you know, just makes you constantly like running into things that you wouldn't otherwise run into, right? Yeah. Like, we have a bunch of friends that we've made through our message board, The Refuge, where we have all like this crazy active community of like super hardcore golfers who have, like, the whole point was to get them to kind of like introduce themselves to each other and kind of help people find golf partners all around the world, who kind of like think about the game and interact with the game in the same way. And it's just really funny to me. I was talking to my wife about this the other day, that like, there's so many of those people that live in San Francisco or whatever. And it's like, would we ever go hop on an airplane as a couple to like go hang out with, you know, my friend Ion in the Bay Area and like his family? Like, would we ever just hop on a plane and like go stay with them and, you know, go hang out and go to restaurants? Like, probably not. That's probably not ever happening. Would we go do that to like go play three or four different golf courses in the Bay Area? Of course. There's nothing weird about that at all. Like, that would be such a no-brainer. And it's cool that it gives you kind of like this, you know, it gives you kind of like this center of gravity for relationships or for travel or for competition or whatever. And that's, again, it's kind of a long answer, but that's kind of how we think about it, I guess.
No, it's super applicable. Like, I just moved down to Tampa, and And when I got here, I played with some refuge guys. It was like my first round, and yeah, it's a great thing. It's super applicable.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are creating content, and a lot of where that comes from is like, oh, most people can't just, or won't just, you know, travel the world to create experiences like this, for a living. And so you guys are kind of the proxy for these amazing experiences, and you're transferring them on to platforms that people can see, get a piece of. As a creative person, which you are, do you ever have trouble translating that feeling of like what it's like to experience a place really well?
Yes. That's a very good question. And I probably don't have a great answer, but other than just kind of a rambling yes, that you definitely feel that way. And I think I'm like, I've thought about this a lot, and I'm like, I've reiterated this answer a bunch of times, but like, I'm just like super, super lucky and super, super thankful that I work with like the group that I work with, because a lot of this stuff is like, if you were going around trying to do this stuff solo, like that's exactly what you would run into. It's just like, all right, well, shit, how different is, you know, the 18 holes at Erin Hills versus the 18 holes at Lawsonia Links, right? And like, yeah, they're both great. There are obviously like noticeable differences, but like you're going to walk away from those two experiences. And obviously you talk about like the money, right, between the two of them, and they're very different price point and, right, and kind of like accommodations differences and stuff like that. But other than that, you're just going to walk away and be like, yeah, it's like big and bold, and there's a lot of land movement and amazing green complexes, and like the vibe is great. And like, you just start like spitting out all these cliches that, you know, they're all true, but like you can only take that so far, right? And
yeah,
it kind of requires like there's this immense luxury being at those places with the other people that we work with, and like seeing how they interacted with it and bouncing ideas off of them and just having them to like point a camera at, right? So that it's not constantly you and your thoughts and like challenging each other. And like, that's half the fun of what we do, is, you know, getting in the bar at night and talking about like, well, I think Cabot Links is bullshit. Well, I think it's the best course of all time. And like going back and forth on those arguments is like, makes you see things in a different way. And so having like a bigger group to just like bounce ideas off has helped in such a huge way. But other than that, I mean, that's probably like our biggest, kind of antidote to what you're talking about. But I think other than that, I think we hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, what we work really hard at is kind of letting like the leaning into like whatever the medium is, right? So if we're trying to talk about a golf course on a podcast, as you probably have now found out after doing some episodes, like that's very hard to do, right? And you yeah. have to like, it's really, really hard to take somebody there. And so when you are doing that, you have to do a lot of prep work, and you got to like really think about what you're going to say. And you got to really challenge yourself on like what you do like about a place, and really trying to get beyond great vibe, great hang, vibes are impeccable, like land movement, oh my gosh, routing, like that stuff is like, it's easy to throw out there. And we certainly for sure still do lean on all those cliches, but that's a lot different than when you're doing a video about a place, right? So like going back to, you know, like I guess, I mean, a lot of the stuff we do, but leaning in on what, like really dialing into like what the medium is that you're working in. And if it's video, like there's no way that I can word like what a beautiful vista better than just like showing you the picture, right? And so like we really, really, really try to not psych ourselves out on that by just like letting the pictures do the work, or letting the, you know, letting an interview speak for itself, or letting, sometimes it's honestly like natural sound. Like I can think of like the video we did at Sylvie's, and like there's this really, really tense moment between Solly and I, and I actually don't remember who edited it, if it was me or Matt Golden, our other editor that we work with, but there's like this really big putt and you can just hear all this like natural wind noise pumping through. And it's like what's going to tell the story of just like big open kind of like desolate wasteland, like better than that, right? And so like just constantly like challenging yourself to kind of get out of the way, honestly, is the best way to kind of bring people there. I think when you try to overly explain it, as I'm probably doing right now, that's where you kind of get yourself into trouble.
Yeah. I mean, it really made me think of two things. The first being how I think about this all the time in architecture, how really our only job is to not fuck it up, because nature, I think this is something I believe, but kind of by definition is perfect. And oftentimes the more that we just leave it alone, the better it's going to be. I love how you guys just put in some natural sounds, and that's really great. And I also know that you're a big movie guy, and it's so much easier to tell a story when you just show it rather than speak it.
Yeah. It's I don't even know if easier is the right term, right? It's just like so much more effective, right? I think everybody's like natural tendency is to kind of be like, no, I was there, like let me explain it to you. And yeah, it's like I'm sure we've made like dozens and dozens of like horrible videos and horrible missteps in that regard, but you know, we're trying to get better and better at just like getting out of the way and letting the pictures do the talking. Show, don't tell, right? Isn't that what they say?
Like that's exactly right. So Henry and I talk all the time about kind of our lead domino, the oh shit moment where you play golf course for the first time and you just appreciate what has happened there to make it a golf course, I guess, is probably the best way I can describe it. Does one come to mind for you when I say that?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. North Berwick in Scotland. I think I was there, I do remember what year it was. It was 2015. I was there for the Open Championship. Brought my clubs, had an amazing time, and just happened to have like, you know, a couple of those like early when you first arrive jet lag days, where you're just kind of looking to stay upright and kill some time. And I was there with Sean Martin and Matt Van Zandt, who played at Texas A&M. Awesome player, great guy. And we were there, and luck. I mean, I didn't know anything about golf course architecture. I didn't really know anything about Scotland, honestly, candidly. Like I was working for the PGA Tour and I knew a ton about pro golf and the PGA Tour circuit and the different courses that they went to, but I did not know much other than, yeah, I mean, the old course in Carnoustie and Muirfield, like they're pretty good. Didn't know anything off the beaten path. And luckily those guys did. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go hop on the train and go check this golf course out. And it just absolutely blew my face off. Because I think it was the first time I'd ever played Lynx golf, and just this idea of like, oh my God, you don't have to fly to the hole. And I know how obvious that sounds, but like that was truly when the light went out for me, what went on for me, I should say. And navigating the wind. And then of course, North Berwick has all the like really funky stuff too. They got the wall in front of the 13th green, and they've got the blind shot on 14 and the Redan on 15 and the insane green on 16 and kind of the punch bowl type E sort of green on 17. And then they've got the kind of like, you get to 18 and it's almost like, wait, is that it? And like this, it's just this little like kind of drive and pitch hole, but also maybe it's brilliant. And also I'm like not used to playing right in the middle of a town. What is this? And also like we walked here from the train station. I didn't know that was a thing that you could do in golf. And I mean, it was just like, just unbelievable. And I don't think, I mean, that feeling hasn't really left me since, right? Whenever you get on a firm and fast golf course and whenever you don't have to fly it to the hole, I probably subconsciously harken back to that round a little bit.
DJ, I'm wondering what the worst golf course that you absolutely loved was.
The worst golf course that I absolutely loved?
Yeah, by worst, maybe yeah, by yeah, anybody no, else's I standards.
I think, actually, no, it's I mean, I feel a little bad giving it this, you know, this award, so to speak, but I think there's been a bunch of contenders on Strapped, which is kind of like a budget golf series that we do. And it basically takes us to a bunch of weird corners of America. And we play a lot of We play a lot of $15 munis and you know, $30, like, here's your cart and your hot dog and your bucket of range balls type places. And the one that really comes to mind for me is Madison Golf Course in Peoria. Is kind of in, like, you know, maybe not the best part of town, and it's been there for 100 years, and the greens are all shrunken in and nothing. And it's probably, I don't know, 5,800 yards, 6,000 yards, something like that. But God, we just had such a blast out there. And it is one of those places that, you know, if you're out there with the right people, and, you know, you can go make a couple birdies and drive some par fours and, look at some cool houses. Like, they kind of weaves through a little corner of, like, a kind of historic district in Peoria, Illinois. And, you know, there's one tee box that, like, is right in front of this, apartment complex. Like, you kind of almost feel like you have, like, stadium seating behind you, because it literally just backs right up to this apartment complex. And, yeah, I mean, that was one that we hadn't played too many courses like it, I would say, but it was pretty unforgettable. And, we just had a blast. Would love to return.
That's great. Any golf books? In terms of, like, architecture, was there a lead domino for you for maybe something that you read in that space?
Definitely. I think Spirit of St. Andrews is obviously, you know, kind of a pretty required reading, I think, for anybody who wants to become an insufferable golf course nerd. That one's pretty big. I think Andy Johnson sent me his copy, and I don't think I ever sent it back. So apologies to him. I should probably do that at some point. And then other than that, less from like a, you know, an architecture, like, there should be multiple routes to the hole, and this is, you know, a great hazard is strategically placed, and all that kind of stuff. Right. I think the my favorite golf book I've ever read is To the Links Land by Michael Bamberger. Cool. Kind of detailing his journey to become basically take a year off with his wife and try to figure out why he loved golf. And a lot of the shit that we talked about earlier in this podcast is probably plagiarized from that book, but he just does such a cool job of getting in touch with what he loved about professional golf, what he loved about recreational golf, what he loved about golf overseas. It's phenomenal. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Really cool. So you started your early career right out of college, writing about competitive golf. What was your interest in competitive golf at that time? Clearly you guys cover a lot of competitive golf now. Where were you then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I thought I was much more, adept of a fan than I probably was, looking back. Right. I mean, I think I was kind of like, yeah, I mean, I watch Sundays of the majors, like, what more do you need to know? And then there's probably some truth to that as well. You know, I think once I got into it, I long story short, I was working, at a golf shop in Peoria, Illinois, actually, while I was in college, and, ended up coming across an internship at Golf Week magazine, and got there, took basically like a summer between my junior and senior year to go intern at Golf Week. And when I was doing that, I started covering in kind of quotes, but, tried to figure out how to cover, like, junior and college and amateur golf, which I think was a great, like, eye opener into, like, oh my God, there's so much more than the PGA Tour. And trying to figure out, like, okay, there's this kid in Texas, like, named Jordan Spieth, who's, like, I think he's, you know, he's going to be pretty good. We probably need you to, like, get on the horn with him. He just won this AJGA event down there. And, you know, this kid, Justin Thomas, won the Rolex. He's, you know, nobody's ever really heard of him. He's from Kentucky. I don't know. I think we should have DJ call him, like, just kind of get some quotes. And so, like, it was really, really fun from that perspective to obviously, like, show up at these tournaments and almost kind of, like, just kind of, like, look around the corner, right? And be like, it's just really, really fun to kind of try to identify who's going to pop, who's not going to pop. And then over the course of the last, shit, you know, 15 years now, really have kept an eye on, like, oh my God, you know, like, I know it worked out for Spieth, but, like, dude, there was this guy you know, Arnon von Vantage from Florida that was like such a stud. I can't believe it didn't work out for him. And like, oh, Bud Cauley, like he was such a murderer when, you know, when he came out, and Patrick Rogers, and like, you know, he was just killing people in junior golf. How is he not one on the PGA Tour yet? And just kind of having all that context has been really, really fun. And it, like I said, it all kind of stemmed from this realization that, you know, golf is like so much bigger than the PGA Tour, which I think then kind of almost extended further to realizing that, oh, you know, I'm kind of circling back to what I was talking about earlier, but almost kind of realizing like golf is so much bigger than the PGA Tour, like competitive golf is so much bigger than the PGA Tour, and golf itself is so much bigger than competitive golf. And like, again, that once you kind of like have the blindfold taken off a little bit, or you kind of like the light goes on for you as far as like how many different corners of this there are, again, it sounds kind of trite, but it's like, yeah, it kind of takes a lifetime to uncover all that stuff, or to kind of put your finger on the pulse of so many different things.
Yeah, that's a really great point, DJ. Because I was going to ask you about, you know, the sponsorship that you guys have gotten into the Young Hitters program. I think that's really cool. What you guys are doing, pretty much equally covering the men's and women's game, I think it's fantastic. But I was going to ask about maybe some epiphanies that you've had getting to know some of these players so well. But I mean, I almost didn't realize how deep in this you are. I mean, that there's a lot of context there, and you probably need it when you're breaking down all this stuff. There's a lot to it.
Yeah. And it's overwhelming too, to like know what to talk about, or to like, I think we probably all of us who are on the podcast have a bad habit of like, you know, I think we probably forget that 99.99% of people aren't following this shit like 60 hours a week. Right. And like, it's really easy to almost kind of like get yourselves all whipped up about some inside baseball thing that like people have no idea what the hell you're even talking about. And so that's a little bit of a battle. But as far as like light bulb moments, are kind of like what, you know, getting to know players and that kind of stuff. I mean, first of all, there's like very, very few players that we actually do know. I feel like it's a pretty superficial relationship with most of them on most counts. But when you do kind of break through and you find someone that, you know, becomes like a really good friend, like a Max Homa or someone like that, I mean, it just like takes your fandom to like a supercharged, like unreasonable, unsustainable level to try to convey to somebody else, right? Like when you're watching Max, like when Max is here, you know, the week of the Korn Ferry Tour, the Web Tour Championship, whatever it was, then in Jacksonville, and he's like talking about how he got his, you know, got his card back and how much that meant to him after struggling, and you've kind of like rode with him through all that, and then you see him win his hometown event at Riviera. I mean, it's like completely and utterly surreal, right? And so I think
just
won
again,
and he just won again. Yeah, good topic, you know, topical conversation. But I think there were whiffs of that kind of behind like why we wanted to sponsor some players, and why we wanted to really be like, yo, this whole journey is honestly, like, if I'm being totally candid, like it's much more for us than it is for them, right? Like it's so much more like we give them, you know, kind of like the money that we can, but it's much more like, hey man, like it's so freaking fun to be there at the beginning and to get to know these players and to get to know like what they're struggling with, and see, you know, someone like Lauren Coughlin overcome like confidence issues or putting issues or whatever, just know how she feels going into a week, and like seeing her breakthrough stuff is unbelievably freaking cool. And to, you know, see someone like Justin Huber, who's become like a really, really good friend, try to, you know, kind of navigate like a bunch of injuries and navigate coming back and navigating his family life. I mean, it just gives you like so much more, gives you so much more context into the world of pro golf, which is, I think, really helpful. And so it's not, we haven't had we haven't had any media agencies really give us a good ROI calculator on how much having the logo of, you know, on Justin Lauer's back yoke is worth. But I think in an immeasurable way, like just getting to know him and hearing his story and following him and getting fans turned on to his story, and like, you know, that's pretty invaluable.
Hey man, it's part of the gig. You got to have a staff bag. It's just,
that's right.
Just part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love that too. Cause you know, I think people can forget that PGA Tour players are people sometimes. And there is a lot of like kind of fandom that goes on too. But I always say like, if you sit on a park bench with somebody long enough, like you'll end up being friends with them, you know?
Yeah. You'll find something to talk about.
Yeah. I think it's great. Who do you love to watch play golf? I mean, these guys are amazing, clearly. I mean, other than like Patrick Reed or a Mike Weir, anybody you really like watching play the game?
Those are the big two for me. but the very, very easy, quick answers are Rory, right? I mean, I don't need to tell you anything about Rory that 15 million other people haven't said, but watching him in person is one of the most astounding things I think you can do. I love seeing different styles of golfers, right? Like I love seeing when my favorite thing to do when, you know, you're on site at an event is find three of the most different playing styles possible and just watch them attack a golf course in a different way. I think that's a blast. And then watching people, like, honestly, I mean, this changes all the time, but just, yeah, like watching somebody who's struggling, right? Like, I know that sounds like kind of sadistic, but these guys are so freaking good, and it applies to the LPGA too, of course, but like they're all so good at figuring it out when it's going wobbly for the most part, that like, yeah, watching someone who doesn't have their best stuff try to compete is just, that's endlessly fascinating to me, because it's so much of a gear that like I don't have, right? Like it's,
yeah,
you know, I know I'm a, like, whatever, a bad five handicap and a really good seven handicap kind of a player, right? And so it's like, I know that, you know, my really, really good shots are pretty tour average, right? And so it's like I can see what that looks like, and I know what that feels like. But when I'm not hitting it good, like, I'm such a lost cause, and I don't really have any of what they have in me, right? Like, Solly always makes this great comment that like the reason they are who they are is like when they hit bad shots, just like we hit bad shots, but like they also hit the next shot, right? Instead of me hitting the next shot. And so they just, watching how they can avoid compounding errors is like just so fascinating to me.
It's a good point. The one player that I've really enjoyed watching kind of through a struggle has been Jordan Spieth recently. Yeah. And, you know, he just won and he's got this, you know, funky little swing move going on. I think anybody's lying if they say it looks good, but you know, you can tell that he's kind of on the rise out of that rut, but it doesn't either feel right or look right yet, or it's not fully comfortable. And to know, just like as a player or whatever, to know that he's not even close to his best and he's just still trying to find something that feels good and he's winning on that, is, it's crazy. I mean, that is something I really appreciate.
Yeah, it's the best. It's like the best roller coaster in the sport by far is watching him.
That's awesome. All right, let's move on to some more informal stuff. Every home cook has their go-to dish. If you're cooking something special at home, where are you putting your confidence?
Oh man, that's a good question. My wife and I cook quite a bit. I have like a turkey meatloaf that I make that's pretty good.
Oh.
And I like the secret that to making, I didn't realize this for a very long time, but the secret to making really good meatloaf is mushrooms and basically like dicing mushrooms really, really, really small. They just obviously have so much water in them and they have so much moisture that it like, A, you can't even really taste them when once they actually get ground up in there, but it will just make the juiciest meatloaf that you've ever had. So make pretty decent meatloaf. We make a pretty good amount of like homemade pizza. That's really fun. Probably something fairly basic. We do, you know, a little bit of like a chicken and gnocchi and vegetables and, you know, stuff like that is probably the go-to. Definitely nothing crazy. I'm not a very adventurous chef. No, I'm not like Tron will get deep in the shishito pepper scene and the, you know, sous vide-ing duck and all kinds of crazy shit that I can't really hang with him on, but I love eating.
I love it.
I can't really hang. on the production.
Good meatloaf is crazy underrated. You know, Henry always says, like, there's always that one dish on the menu somewhere where if you go to a place, it's pretty good and they have meatloaf on the menu, you're just a fool if you don't order it, because you know it's going to be damn good.
That's the Bannon secret, right? Although it's even the meatloaf at Bannon has probably even gotten overrated at this point.
Yeah, it's a hot take. You may be right. If you were taken to a remote island for the rest of your days and all it had was food, shelter, and a record player, which album would you bring?
Oh my gosh. Oh, cripes. I don't know. This is going to change like
every day.
It's going to change every single day. Is it a nice remote island? Well, how's the weather at the remote island?
We'll just say we can control the variables. I think we'll keep the weather nice just to make things.
Okay. I would say, kind of a record player, cliche maybe, but I would say Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys would be my answer today. And if you ask me again in an hour, I'm sure it would probably change. But I think that has just enough sunshine, just enough like crippling depression, just enough weird stuff, just enough catchy stuff to, kind of check all the boxes I really like.
Love that. What do you think your wife would pick? So DJ, your wife's really into music too, isn't she?
She is super into music. Yeah. She's been taking a break from it, but she used to do a music podcast called Radio Gaga Podcast. And now actually we're lucky enough that she works on kind of music selection and supervision for a lot of the videos that we do. So it's been awesome working with her on that. She would probably pick, you know what I think she would probably, I could maybe talk her into Pet Sounds. I know she's a big Pet Sounds fan too, but I think she would probably take In the Court of the Crimson King by King Crimson.
Cool.
Which is a very dark take, and again it might be more of a, you know, you're on kind of like a Norwegian fjord or something like that type of island rather than like in the Caribbean. Down with me.
It'd be good fjords. That's a hell of a place to take a vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Last question of the day, and perhaps the most important question, since you are the pie man, and I love pie myself, we are going to do a top five pie ranking. Rule is you must have at least two and at least two sweet and at least two savory.
Okay.
In order.
Oh gosh. All right. Well, to avoid dead air, let me just start throwing out my contenders. Love an apple pie. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not great on the difference between like sweet and savory. So you tell me if they're sweet.
Salty.
Or, okay. Gotcha.
Like I got shepherd's pie on there, and then okay, I'm not going to tell you my other savory pie because it's too good.
Well, that's what I was kind of making sure. That's where my head was going, but I didn't want to sound like an idiot. So I'm going to throw in for contenders. My top five would be some sort of like, peanut butter chocolate Reese's type of like kind of cheesecakey pie type of thing.
Yeah.
Is always great. I would pick a banana cream pie. I would pick an apple pie. I would second your shepherd's pie. I would go, and then I would just go with like a very, very basic chicken pot pie. And I think doubling back, I think I'd go shepherd's pie fifth, chicken pot pie fourth, apple pie third, banana cream second, and Reese's peanut butter pie first.
Flaming hot takes. That's awesome. I never even thought about, you know, I had a buddy when I was in middle school, early high school, who would make like an entire tray of just basically like one giant Reese's, you know, bar. Absolute. It was so good. So good.
Yeah, that's a hard combo to really screw up.
Love it. DJ Pie, thank you for coming on to the Thai podcast today. Excited to see future content. Keep up with you, and thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, you got it, man. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely.
Have some pie.
Cheers.